Hello and welcome to the CAAV podcast. For this episode, we're going to be talking about the Agricultural Land Occupation Survey that is conducted annually by the CAAV. And I'm joined once again by Jeremy Moody, Secretary and Advisor to the Association. Now, Jeremy, how many years has this survey been running for?
This survey of decisions about occupation of farmland has been running now since the late 1970s. This edition will be our 45th. It's a survey we put in place as we saw the need to understand the changes that in people's decisions following the 1970s experience of very high taxation and the imposition of succession legislation, that if there was to be a rational discussion of future policy, as it has, of course, then evolved, it needed to be done with an understanding of what decisions people were taking, how land was being let, and be better informed to try and evolve better policies.
And how is the data collected?
We collect the data directly from members. We have a standard form for collecting it, asking about the nature of the holding, the size of the holding, about whether this is a holding where land was let and the tenancy has come to an end, what has happened then, or indeed where land that hadn't been let is now let, what it has come from, and then further information around particular aspects of the holding. And we then sometimes pursue further questions.
And is this a pan-UK survey?
We have done England and Wales since the late 1970s. We do a separate survey, which we publish alongside it for Scotland, because Scottish land law and Scottish circumstances are different. And it would make no sense to report the results in one great big Great Britain survey. And Northern Ireland has really a non-existent tenanted sector. It operates on what could look to in Great Britain like grazing lettings with the Conacher system. And so we don't collect data there, but obviously we are watching circumstances there. And that's where what we see are three very different experiments, if you want to look at it this way, in how you manage the letting of land from owners who don't wish to farm to farmers who don't wish to own land. And in England and Wales, we've taken one course with the 1995 Act, earlier significant reform that has seen the let sector remain in the mid-30% of the land area. You've seen Scotland pursue more complex restrictive reform in 2003 that has seen the sector currently stabilise at a much lower share, around 20% of the land area let, and many owners simply not wanting to be anywhere near the letting of land, seeing it as a high-risk, low-return activity in Scotland. And then where that strategy could take you in Ireland, in the north and the south, where making lettings so unattractive and indeed encouraging buying by sitting tenants a century ago, that you have a seasonal lettings market and almost nothing beyond that, such that the Irish Republic is now very positively encouraging, with tax reliefs, the creation of a new let sector starting from scratch. So three very different laboratory experiments, making it fascinating to see how people within a common law market economy actually find their ways through the thicket of legislation and tax.
Now, let's take a look, therefore, at the most recent survey. It is available on the CAAV website. Head to the resources section and it's listed under free publications. Jeremy, am I right in saying this is a survey now capturing the changes to occupation from 2021?
That's right. Obviously, we collect the data after the year. That allows us to catch the big tenancy dates for England and Wales of Lady Day in the spring and Michaelmas in the autumn. And then it takes time to analyse the data, and we're now in a position to publish it.
And what are the key highlights you've drawn from last year's data?
There are highlights, obviously, within the year, but of course it sits within the context of all the previous surveys that have come. And I think one of the points to emphasise at the very beginning of this is that while the tenancy reform that brought in farm business tenancies in 1995 was very effective in the early years at bringing land into the let sector that had previously been losing land in England and Wales, hand over fist, the creation of explicit area subsidy payments with the single payment in 2005, followed by the basic payment now, has been very damaging to activity in the LET sector. So we have a position where since 2007, when all the original allocation of entitlements had settled down, activity, the overall activity recorded has been every year between 30 and 40% of what it was in, say, 1999. And the number of FBTs being granted each year are almost exactly 25% of that number in 1999. So it's very much a suppressed sector, pressed by the forces of area payments that encourage stasis in farm occupation. So I think seeing it in that context is actually quite important. And then when we come to look in the year itself, it's really been a year of not a lot of change. But that's why it was important to see that background. It records reduced activity. It records almost no movement in the overall size of the LET sector. So inevitably, every year, some land is lost. It goes to development, or something goes to tree planting, or it's taken back in hand for farming, or whatever it might be. And you need a flow of new land to come in and replace that if the LET sector is to maintain its size, let alone grow. And we saw barely under 4,000 acres of new land come in, not quite enough on our survey to maintain the size, but really just a static sector in terms of all the change that's coming along. The old tenancies, the Agricultural Holdings Act tenancies, continue to be a very significant part of the sector. Officially, on DEFRA figures, 2021 was the first time that the area of land under farm business tenancies exceeded the area of land under Holdings Act tenancies. I actually suspect that that was probably true some years ago in the way the figures are collected, but that is now what the official data itself shows. And those tenancies under the 1986 Act, very often of larger and more equipped holdings, probably now mostly on their second succession, but some still with the second succession to go, do look at the moment for the next decade or two really quite an enduring feature of our tenanted landscape alongside the much more diverse farm business tenancy sector that we'll look at. The outcome then is to look at the impact of policy uncertainty. But perhaps you want to come on to that with another question.
Yeah, because what does the data tell us with regards to the length of lettings and the average length of lettings and some of the rationale and the reasoning behind that?
Yes, this is an interesting area, and it's one on which we've asked more questions for 2021, and they've thrown up some really rather interesting answers. But people will quote quite freely, and the figure does come from these surveys, that the average length of an FBT is between 3 and 4 years. And at a very overall, very simplistic level, that is true. But it hides a great deal more of interest and variety behind that figure. So the first point to make is that if you take all FBTs into account, it will include quite a lot of grazing lets for a season, and it will include quite a lot of specialist cropping rotational lettings. Those are almost necessarily short. If you take FBTs for more than a year, and so you're looking at those that are let more solidly and not for short-term purposes, then you're looking at averages that tend to be around 5 years. If you look behind that still further, the larger the area, the longer it is likely to be let. The more it has equipment, the longer it is likely to be let. So a letting with a building might well be let for 5 years or so on average. The letting of a classic farm, of which is only a minority of the lettings, but with a house and buildings, is typically between 8 and 12 years, varies between year and year, but call it 10 years, say, on a long-term average. If it had been let previously on a long-term Agricultural Holdings Act tenancy, and then let on an FBT, it might well again be let for 7 or 8 years. So there's a great deal more variety around in that.
So on the back of those general figures, perhaps you could look specifically at 2021.
Yes, because this is where we do see one of the prime influences coming through, which is about uncertainty around future policy and probably more about policy than about markets. The average length of the overall FBTs, that great single oversimple figure, was just over 3 years, barely 3 years. If we look at the lettings that were for more than a year, that was 4.7. And that fits really with the pattern since 2018 for England and Wales of shorter lettings, because both owners and indeed would-be tenants are cautious about locking themselves into something when they can see that the shape of subsidies based on land or new arrangements, the new drivers of agricultural policy or environmental policy might all lead them to rethink where they want to be. So we've seen a shortening of term, and that's been a pattern that we've had with each round of policy change. We saw quite conflicting movements when single payment was introduced. We saw a shortening of term in 2013 following the big discussions that became the basic payment, and when England in particular could have seen a new allocation of entitlements based on land, though in the end we did not. But that was a live prospect under the European negotiations. And then really we have seen uncertainty bear on the life of the let sector since 2018, since the big consultations, Health and Harmony in England, Brexit and Our Land in Wales, Stability and Simplicity in Scotland. People are cautious about where they think they want to commit themselves to. And while there might be an argument for letting very much longer so the tenant takes the risk and sees through it all, by no means all tenants actually want to do this. It creates a bias towards letting short. And only, it would appear, policy certainty will actually resolve that and allow the market to go back to where it tried to be at first.
And what does the data highlight in terms of the reasons behind the length of letting?
Yeah, this is interesting because it's the first time we've asked this question and we had a really rather good response to it. And again, it teases away that there is less standardisation in some ways for a lot of FBTs than people often think. In around about a quarter of the lettings, there was a positive case-specific reason why a particular term was chosen. Quite often to do with the landlord's plans for what, after all, is the landlord's own land, whether moving to farm it himself or looking towards development or some other part of a project. But equally, a number of cases where it was reflecting the tenant's circumstances. So this might be to run to the tenant's retirement. It might be so the tenant could enter a scheme or to enable tenant's investment. And I suspect that as we see schemes like, for example, for say, dairy farmers, the slurry store scheme in England come through, that will have a significant bearing on the length of a number of those tenancies where that's relevant. So about a quarter driven by the facts of the case. Most of the rest, and of course the great bulk of FBTs, are bare land lettings. So just a field or several fields, a block of land without too much fixed equipment, where the operational issues around it are less evident, then what we see coming through, you could almost summarise as custom and practice. That there would originally have been a reason for a length of letting being chosen, and that then has just continued. We're letting again for whatever the period is, because we have let that before. We renew on the same terms. And it's that carryover of custom and practice, which is clearly a major factor. And then when you look at that, once you create, and this is the disadvantage of using that simple 3 or 4 year figure for FBTs, once the world comes to understand that FBTs are normally for 3 or 4 years, that enormously reinforces letting for 3 or 4 years. And it's slightly self-defeating, I think, for people who want to see a greater variety in FBTs, and we need to see a greater variety, I think, in FBTs, good variety though there is, just to talk of three-year lettings. It creates its own dynamic that tells people that letting for 3 years is normal, when actually they ought to look harder at what's specifically needed, especially when we move into a world post-basic payment, a world in which there will be private markets in public goods, in which there will be the various environmental schemes, and indeed the simple stability needed to face a more demanding marketplace for the produce that actually provides most of farmers' income.
And you describe that custom and practice as being similar to the Overton window concept. Tell us some more about that concept.
Yes, this is it's an American analyst. So let's give it house room. And he described the window, or Overton described a window of outcomes that people regard as normal. If you sat back and were more dispassionate, you could see a much wider range of possible outcomes. But where a particular set of outcomes are regarded as socially normal, then that's what people tend to do. And it's by stretching, as the phrase has it, stretching the Overton window, that you can then begin to get people to look at new options that they just previously disregarded, not because they were bad options, but because they weren't seen as normal options. And I think that is where looking at the variety of FBTs, looking at the different answers to the challenges that are coming, taking fuller advantage of the freedom of contract to negotiate deals that assure both parties, I think the stretching that Overton window in this way is really a very important thing we have to do so that people look positively at this rather than just live with a world where they're told FBTs are for 3 years, so that's what they do.
And in that situation where parties agree on a normal or what's deemed to be a normal length, say 3 or 4 years within the agreement, does that sometimes hide the actual length of occupation because agreements do tend to get rolled over?
Oh, in the majority of cases, that will be true. Our evidence is that of the order of some 70% of lettings are to the farmer who had the land before. There is an enormous bias to continuity at this point, and an early argument around FBTs was to distinguish the expectation of occupation from the formal legal tenure. And I can think of people who will have had the land on successive FBTs now since FBTs were created, and probably with the older Gladstone Bowers beforehand. And you can see that in reality, if there's a sensible deal between parties who don't offend each other too much, and the rent gets paid and the land gets looked after, why change? But owners wish to retain flexibility. They can be cautious about prospective changes in tax rules or some other change in law or regulation. And they like to maintain that element of freedom, the ability to deal with the unexpected and circumstances. And again, as I said, farmers can be shy of being locked into something that takes them into an indefinite future whose shape few of us can actually yet discern.
You've spoken a lot about the low level of activity, which is a common feature in a lot of these surveys, and provide an explanation around the level of caution due to changes in agricultural policy. But are there other elements at play here, particularly around more environmental uses of land?
In truth, at this point, looking at the 2021 survey, I think it's too early to tell. We are moving in England into the very first steps of the new environmental land management schemes. And I don't see from the survey evidence that we have for 2021 that that was particularly relevant to decisions about land occupation made then. And I suppose it's worth breaking this down into two aspects. There's the question of the tenant possibly wanting to come into schemes and pick up a scheme. And obviously SFI is exceptionally well tailored for that. But we're only looking in 2022 at the very first elements of SFI. And we know of the past that countryside stewardship has not really raised any significant landlord-tenant questions. So that wouldn't really be in our survey. What will be more interesting is to see as 2022 and perhaps really 2023 come through, whether the new environmental options come to offer, and there's some anecdotage to this effect, come to offer an alternative market for some owners to letting land. That land might go alternatively into tree planting, or it might be directly into a more serious, higher level agri-environment scheme or land, environmental land management scheme. We saw this when set aside was first introduced. It was possible in the late 1980s to set a whole farm's arable area into set aside. And we did see that taking land away from the let sector at that point, and hence the set aside rules were changed. It is possible that environmental payments, if they are attractive, and where owners have the capacity themselves to be able to implement them, that this could create an alternative lettings market. That would run against the pressures that you can see many owners being under, where basic payment goes, that actually a good rent from a good farmer for farming their land and looking after it properly might be the more attractive option. And we're too early to tell the balance between those pressures.
And we've also spoken several times about the increased interest occasionally in joint ventures, share farming, contract farming. Has that had any noticeable impact on the letting sector?
No, it's an interesting feature of the decision-making that we pick up in the survey, that these two markets are relatively distinct. Not much land comes out of letting to go into joint venture contract farming. Not much land comes out of joint ventures and contract farming into letting. I suspect there are different levels of attitude to risk. There are, of course, an enormous variety of contracting arrangements. People tend to think of stubble to stubble, but actually quite often it still involves the farmer involved in some operations, so they're more varied. There are some aspects of farming which are better suited to contract farming, very obviously combinable cropping, other areas better suited for the simple control of a tenant farmer at that point. But overall, there's not now a lot of movement between the two sectors, that it will be more a matter of owner-occupiers looking to involve another farmer through a contracting arrangement than it would be in substitution for a tenancy. While, of course, for a tenant coming under economic pressure or aging, using a contractor is a way of maintaining the business without breaching the tenancy agreement. So it works a different way there.
What could be done, Jeremy, to increase the amount of land available within the let sector? Some years ago, you did some work looking at the Irish tax relief. What did that reveal? And could that be a useful policy lever here in the UK?
Yeah, I think there are two steps to this approach. Given that we can establish a platform of legislative stability, both in terms of agricultural policy, but confidence in the framework of letting. If we've got that underlying platform, then the first thing is with the removal of basic payment, that pays people to stay on an area of land. And as that goes, that incentive to stasis will probably make available a lot of opportunities for people to be able to take land where it suits them, the best chances for the right people we need to be part of the farming future for this country as we move more into more greater exposure to markets. But that seems to me to be a necessary condition for this, but it's not a sufficient condition. If you like, that's the negative, is removing an obstacle. But looking at something that then leads people, perfectly ordinary owners of farmland, this is not a question of the great estates and the traditional institutions who've all broadly made up their mind, and if anything, now are the people who are leading the way towards shorter lettings. This is a matter of families and private owners who have farmland, who are not necessarily wanting to farm it themselves, and what would encourage them to make a letting. And at this point, I find the example of what's happened in the Irish Republic to be very illustrative and informative. The Irish Republic has adopted something like the rent-a-room approach we have for income tax, where if you rent a room in your house, you can take $7,500 or so of the income tax-free. And that's just to encourage the lodgings market. What they've done is said, if you take farmland, have farmland, and you let it to somebody who's not connected to you, and you let it for at least 5 years, we will give you up to 15,000 euros of rent tax-free from income tax. If you let it for longer, we will allow you to have more income tax-free from income tax. And that was introduced at that level in 2015. And within 5 years, and we're still waiting for more data for the last couple of years from the Irish government, but within 5 years, that had created a let sector of lettings for at least 5 years, covering 8% of the Irish Republic, where previously there had been virtually no lettings at all, because it was breaking away from landlord-tenant, was part of Irish independence and the evolution of Irish agriculture 100 years ago. That figure of 8% under new tenancies let for more than 5 years is more than we've achieved in 25 years of FBTs. And that illustrates the very positive incentive. And the reason why they're doing it is exactly the same thing that troubles us, which is the lack of growth in productivity, in efficiency, in competitiveness in the years of area payments. And they see opening up access to land for the right people to be able to farm the land, the proficient to farm the land, as being the clue to their future productivity. And I think the model sits there for us to review very closely and adopt. The tax cost is relatively small. The gain from moving land from poorly performing farmers into well-performing farmers might even outweigh the tax cost. But certainly in terms of the vitality of the rural economy, it would be a very positive move.
And there is a paper, of course, within the free publication section on the CAAV website where Jeremy goes into quite some detail analysing the Irish tax relief. But in conclusion, Jeremy, where does all this go?
Oh, into the future. And that of course, is the unknown bit. We are watching then how policy stability, should it emerge, then sees people make real business decisions about the land that is theirs and the farming opportunity that is theirs. Again, that matrix of balance between farming opportunity and environmental uses, and that may vary between different types of land and different sorts of outcome and outlook. And of course, the many cases where good farming and good environmental management will go together. So we wait to see produce markets. If they remain strong and if input costs can be controlled, will again create their own incentives for the basic business of farming, untroubled by area payments and continuing as what we are going to have to do if we're to feed ourselves and make our part for the world.
Jeremy Moody, thank you ever so much for talking through the highlights of the Agricultural Land Occupation Survey for 2021. A copy of that survey of the data and commentary can be found on the CAAV website. For this episode, on behalf of Jeremy and I, thank you very much for listening. And there we are. We've reached the end of yet another episode of the CAAV podcast. If you want to keep up to date with all future episodes, or indeed catch up on previous ones, please head to our website, or you can subscribe for free on whichever platform you use. Also, if you've got any feedback or ideas for future episodes, please get in touch by sending us an email to inquire@caav.org.uk. But that's it for today. Until the next time, thank you very much for listening, and bye for now.